The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from Carter Subaru Studio. I tell you what, there is a perfect storm that has hit today. Absolute perfect storm.
No, what's that?
Okay, about a week ago, I got my hair cut. And I love the place that cuts my hair.
Mm-hmm.
This particular visit, it was a guy I'd never seen before. And I don't think he understood what I wanted for my haircut.
What'd you tell him?
Well, I always tell them the same thing. Number two on the sides, finger length on top.
Mm.
And he started buzzing the top with the number two, which made me look balding. Like really balding. Like right off the bat.
Well, first of all, I think it looks good. But Mark, my husband, did ask, did Dory cut his hair really short? Or has it always been that short?
No. It's never been this short. And so, you know, with a little dipsy dab of product, I can make it, you know, look as good as I can make it. But I've been wearing my ski cap today.
Uh-huh.
And so now my hair is sticking straight up. And I just look like a freak. It's it's a perfect storm of freakishness between the way too short haircut and the ski cap and everything else. I just saw myself in the bathroom, and it's always a hideous sight.
It's a snow day. We all look comfy.
No, because I got that picture when I was at the Super Bowl with Brock and
Russian
Sully.
Immigrant.
What?
Album
in
cover.
New York, and Chris Sullivan reposted it, and I retweeted it a few days ago because it looked like a boy band album cover. And then I think it was Matt Gilbert on Twitter who said, now it is an album cover. And he named our band the Seattle Squeeze, and the name of the album was Toxic Masculinity.
Our listeners can judge for themselves, because I think Nicole just tweeted something.
No, don't tweet anything of me today.
I did. The picture of you guys offering to push the bus.
But I had my hat on, though.
Yes.
I'm fine with the hat on.
He made another album cover using that photo.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
Go check it out.
And then we're getting all kinds of reports from all around the region here. As I asked via the Online Trading Academy text line, we want to keep everybody posted. And we have this huge pool of reporters, that being you. And Dory on Whidbey Island. Not Dory. Hi, Dory. Lori on Whidbey Island. Roads are a mess here, especially the back roads. Stay home. If you're driving and see someone in a ditch, don't even try to go around them. You will be in the ditch, too. People here do not know how to drive in the snow. And that's very true. We just don't get enough, and there are a lot of people who have no clue.
And they got it really bad in Whidbey Island.
Well, and I heard something in your newscast.
Yeah.
That the state patrol said, if you don't have to be on the roads today, don't drive.
Yes.
I'm going to extend that to all 365 days of the year. If you don't have to be on the roads, just don't drive. That would solve a lot of things around here.
But you still need to work. And what they're saying is, if you don't have like one of those essential jobs, if you don't have like the one that, okay, and I know you can argue that, you know, again, people can just stay home.
Yeah, I mean,
one has that luxury, or very few.
No, the only jobs where you really have to respond, if you're like a surgeon, firefighter, talk show host. That's about it. You do that, society's covered. If we have all those things on a daily basis.
Sure. Already people are complaining, where are the snow plows? So you have to have those people out there.
I'm seeing that a lot, too. Somebody on 405 just texted us and said that they feel like they've been ignored on the east side and on 405 in particular because they're not seeing snowplows there. So that has been a big complaint today from what I'm hearing from a lot of our listeners.
The state's response is that they have 100 of them out there, snowplows out there, but there are 5,000 miles of freeway that they're trying to cover. And 405 would be a big one, though.
Yeah, you'd think so. And then I was thinking this morning, as I'm driving in, because the freeway was pretty empty when I came in, around 9:15 or so. But it gave me some time to muse. And I still think if we hadn't wasted all this money on Sound Transit, because one of the plans that was a stupid plan as well was to build a monorail that would go up the median of I-5. And I always thought, forget about a monorail because there's no flexibility. But if you built just a dedicated, elevated busway, and so the bus, when it gets to wherever it's going, could actually get off and get people to their streets, to their job, to their neighborhoods, instead of light rail, which just has a fixed line and no flexibility, and you would have had no right-of-way problems. You could have just flown this busway over the overpasses that are already out there on the freeway. Would have been genius.
Wait. Fly them over? What are you talking about?
Just have them high enough so that they could go over existing overpasses.
Oh, that sounds like a logistical nightmare.
They've done it. If you go down just south of Boeing, the Sound Transit line goes over really high overpasses, and it's up even higher.
And you want that from Tacoma up to Snohomish County?
Whatever we could have afforded.
Oh, that'll go over well.
But buses would have been the solution. Buses and other non-money-costing ways to give people incentives. Like Nicole was telling me, I got this device on my desk that one of our engineers gave us that supposedly would allow me to broadcast from home without too much degradation in quality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to test that out. But I'm nervous about that because I think I'd get addicted to working from home and I think the show would suffer. Because you know how much I love to interact with my coworkers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I know a lot of broadcasters who do that.
But there are times when maybe you can't get in. I mean, for example, if there were a big earthquake, you would have the option.
Yeah.
If we could still broadcast, which presumably we would be able to.
I got to look into all of this. And then there's one other thing. A listener just sent me a picture from Lower Woodland, where the kids are sledding, you know, the hills there at Lower Woodland.
And that makes me jealous.
Yeah, except, I agree with you, but it's a beautiful sight. Kids are sledding on the hills at Lower Woodland. But the person who sent the photo points out that this is, in particular, right around this hill, a very heavy use drug route in Lower Woodland. And the person who sent the picture said, let's hope none of these kids get poked by dirty HIV or hepatitis needles. And I was thinking, you know, there's so much truth to that, that is one of the concerns under this beautiful, pristine blanket of snow. The new reality is there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of heroin needles laying all around our region. And kids who used to just be able to go out and innocently enjoy sledding in the snow, they now have to deal with the reality.
Think of that one. So in addition to wearing your helmets, wear really heavy gloves.
And body armor, like, you know, a knight in shining.
That's fun.
That's the only way you can enjoy yourself in Seattle these days, I'm telling you. With all of that is mere prelude, let's get right to our big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
Okay, you ready for the breaking news? This could have been a Dory Monson Show exclusive, too, because it was a week ago when we broke the story, thanks to a listener's tip, that the new director of transportation for the city of Seattle, Sam Zimbabwe, that's not his real name. It's actually Gus Zimbabwe. No, he changed the last name. And so we have been asking to get Sam on the show because it just struck me as odd that somebody would, grown adult, he did it about 10 years ago. He was Sam Zimmerman Bergman when he lived in Philadelphia and was working in transportation. And then he became Sam Zimbabwe when he went to Washington, D.C. and remained Sam Zimbabwe when he came out here to Seattle. So we've been asking for over a week now if we could get Sam on the show and just wanting to know what's up with his name. Why did he change it? So they sent a response to us this weekend, and what they said is we've been monitoring Dory's interest. We've been following Dory's interest in Sam's last name. And so we got a statement. Let's cut off the part about his name. So they said, yeah, we'd like to get him on, but he's been getting the tunnel open.
He's had a few things. I mean, all the snow today completely overshadowed the fact that we have a brand new tunnel that people can drive through.
Yeah.
For the first day.
And I get that. That's, you know, early on in his term. And so, yes, I do want to ask him about it. Okay, I was able to find the email, Nicole. So here's what they wrote in response to my interest in his last name. Zimbabwe, a strong foundation of stone. Did you know that Zimbabwe derives from the Shona name for an ancient town believed to mean large houses of stone? Great Zimbabwe was such an important part of its national identity that the country in southern Africa was named for the historic town. Obviously, Zimbabwe is also Sam's last name. When he and his wife got married, they combined the beginnings of each of their four family surnames to form the name Zimbabwe, and thereby established their new home and family on a strong foundation of stone. Sam looks to bring the same foundation to SDOT as we work together to build the city of the future.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Story closed.
Oh, not yet. No, because I still want to know.
But why? You are...
Why?
Now he's already explained. This is an example of where there was no way of him winning or satisfying your questions.
Well, there's
he's
nothing
just to... answered it.
No, because what I really want to know... Do you remember... Did you hear the story about the taco truck in Portland? A very popular taco truck.
Cultural appropriation.
Two women, they went down to Mexico. They learned how they made these particular tortillas. They even said, you know what? We peeked in the window of one place and watched them make it. And they said, we just wanted to be as authentic as possible. And so then they come up. They open this taco truck in Portland. And they did an interview where they said, how they'd gone to Mexico and they looked in the window to watch how the ladies made the tortillas. And the leftists in Portland went crazy on them and drove them out of business. It was called cultural appropriation. They just attacked them viciously in every forum they could. And these two poor women who were just thriving and had a wonderful little taco truck business, and they were forced out of business because of the hue and cry of cultural appropriation by the left in Portland.
Which, you know, it starts off as a few people making a comment like that, and then it just blows up. And it's like, I hope we can get to a point where it doesn't always turn out that way.
I agree. I'm just curious why some cultural appropriation, which is... By the way, I mean, it's just such a social justice phrase in and of itself. But why some people have to lose their business because of cultural appropriation and some people get a free pass.
And they really shouldn't. They should not lose their business. And it's like...
Agreed.
We need to kind of work toward moving away from that, just that mob mentality.
So I'd like to know...
So Sam Zimbabwe gave you his answer.
I'd like to know how he has avoided the mob mentality of going after people for cultural appropriation. And I still want to know if they picked that name, even though there's almost no Caucasians in Zimbabwe, because it would be helpful. I mean, there's a lot of virulent anti-Semitism on the left here in Seattle. The foundational roots of the Women's March are very anti-Semitic. Is it easier to rise the ranks politically in Seattle with a African-sounding last name than with a Jewish-sounding last name?
He was already rising through the ranks in Washington, D.C. It's not like he doesn't have a good education, transportation policy background.
He's an anti-car zealot.
Okay, well, whatever position.
That's going to be brutal to continue that here in Seattle. But look, I'm just curious about the double standard. I'm fascinated by the double standard. Some people get crucified and some people get a pass. And I'd like to sit down. And as I said, once I get past the whole name thing, I want to forge a new alliance of conviviality and what's the other C word I'm looking for? Conviviality and...
Cohesion?
Cohesion. I think there might be one more.
And cooperation.
Yes. Conviviality, cohesion, and cooperation between this show and the Seattle Department of Transportation. And so we'll get past the name once Sam Zimbabwe comes on, and then I'm going to move on to the conviviality and cooperation and cohesion, because if anybody can heal and mend us in these fractious times, I like to think that it would be Lil Ol' May. Because at heart, I'm a uniter, not a divider. Next up, in the big lead.
The big lead. I told you so.
Here's a shocker. New York City's minimum wage hike to $15 an hour is giving people sticker shock when they go out to buy some food because lunch prices have gone through the roof, lunch and dinner, in New York City since the implementation of $15 an hour. They are finding that businesses are laying off a lot of workers. It's exactly what we have discovered here in Seattle, where $15 an hour has actually hurt the take-home pay of the minimum wage workers who are getting marginally more per hour but have seen their hours get cut. In New York City, a Big Mac is $10.52. That's nearly a dollar more than the $9.58 that they used to charge at the same restaurant. And so $15 an hour, the cost is getting passed on to consumers. And when you add up, if you buy lunch, you know, we told you the story a few weeks ago. Seattle now has the third highest cost of living in the United States for buying takeout food or restaurant food. And it's because of $15 an hour. And when you impose that extra dollar or two on people who dine out, say, once a day, let's say it's three times a week, about $5 a week, that's an extra $250 hidden tax so that we could raise the minimum wage. And it's not helping the minimum wage workers at all. All it's doing, like most taxes, is hurting the taxpayers, the citizens. New York City, the latest proof of that. All of that is your big lead this hour.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
We're going to check the news for you, and then we will count down our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio coming up next. On this icy, snowy day, it's time when we like to count down our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
And our awesome audio, as always, brought to you by our friends at Brown Bear Car Wash. Oh, I love that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She, like, is like, she's just like the most, like, enlightened, like, person. She says like a lot, too. I noticed. She was talking about the privilege of being cisgendered.
Number three.
They're like, and we need to, and like when, you know, they say discrimination or unfair incarceration of black men, and then they pause and the crowd cheers, and it's like in their mind, they're like, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Right. Yeah.
For acknowledging it. And it's like, okay, you know, acknowledging racism is a really big step.
Yeah, it's a necessary first step.
Look what happened to Brett Kavanaugh when he was confronted.
Oh my God. It literally is an identity meltdown. It's a fundamental.
I worked for everything I ever had.
How does an identity literally melt down? I really don't know the answer to that. I'm asking you. Literally was an identity meltdown.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, and we can all, almost every single person in this country can acknowledge some privilege of some type. You know,
right.
I'm a cisgendered woman. I will never know the trauma of feeling like I'm not born in the right body. Mm-hmm. And that is a privilege that I have. Mm-hmm.
That is like literally so true. At number two, actor Liam Neeson, who in a bizarre interview promoting his new movie, talked about a friend of his who got raped several years ago. And he found out that she had been raped by a black man. And Liam Neeson says he went out for a week looking for a random black man that he could kill in response. It is a bizarre interview that he gave.
Number two.
I'll tell you a story. This is true. I'm not going to use any names, but I was away and I came back and she told me she had been raped. But she handled the situation of the rape in the most extraordinary way. But my immediate reaction was, I asked, did she know who it was? No. What color were they? She said it was a black person. I went up and down areas with a cosh, hoping I'd be approached by somebody. I'm ashamed to say that. And I did it for maybe a week, hoping some black would come out of a pub and have a go at me about something, you know, so that I could kill him. And it took me a week, maybe a week and a half to kind of go for that. And she said to me, where are you going? I said, I'm just going out for a walk, you know. What's wrong? No, nothing's wrong. Fine.
It's shocking admission that he went hunting to kill a black man for about a week. And he says he feels horrible about it and can't believe that he had those emotions. But that's actor Liam Neeson. And then at number one, you have the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, who had a bizarre press conference on Saturday. He says, that's not me in blackface in my college yearbook photo. That's not me in the KKK hood and robe. I don't know why they called me Coon Man. But he said, oh, I did once put on shoe polish on my face to go to a Michael Jackson party.
Number one.
That's right.
Are you still able to moonwalk?
Okay, now a reporter says, are you still able to moonwalk? And he kind of gets this smile. He almost looks like he's about to break into a moonwalk, but his wife says, no, you're not going to moonwalk at an apologizing press conference.
Was it you danced the moonwalk?
That's right.
Are you still able to moonwalk?
Oh.
Inappropriate circumstances.
Yeah, his wife needs to be with him more often, I would say.
He looked for space to do it.
I know, he looked around. I know, he was thinking about it. Coming up next, we'll tell you what is today's sign, the end is near. Down the stretch we come. What a day. What a snowy day. What a show. And before I get out of here to play in that snow, it is time for today's edition of
Today's Sign that the End is Near.
Today's sign the world is soon coming to an end. A burglar who broke into a funeral parlor before having sex with a corpse has now been jailed for 6 years. 23-year-old Kasim Shazada Kurum forced his way into a funeral care parlor on November 11th. He violated a dead body at 1:40 a.m. The court heard how, according to surveillance video, he lifted the lids of several coffins inside the funeral home before choosing his victim. Another body was found face down while seven other coffins were also disturbed. Police said that Kurum's actions offended all human sensibility. He had been drinking vodka and smoking an artificial form of cannabis. The judge said he wished he could put him away for longer than just the 6 years because of the deprivation of dignity of the dead that the man showed to the victims. I'd say this dude has a screw loose or something. It's just awful. Oh, it's awful. It's awful. Today's sign number two. A man is planning to sue his parents in India for giving birth to him without his consent. Raphael Samuel. He said he had a great relationship with his parents, but he's compared having children to kidnapping and slavery. He's now 27 years old from Mumbai. He's an antinatalist who believes it is wrong to put an unwilling child through the rigmarole of life for the pleasure of its parents. The antinatalist movement is gaining traction as younger people resist social pressures to have children. Of course, if we could only have children with their consent, and given that kids before they are born are not capable of giving consent, that means that in a generation or so, it would lead to the end of mankind. I think this guy has a screw loose, too. Apparently, he's got a Facebook page with hundreds of followers. One image is captioned, "Parents are hypocrites," with the text saying, "A good parent puts the child above his wants and needs, but the child itself is a want of the parent." Another one of his posts, "If parents truly know what is good for their children, why did they have them?" Another asks, "Isn't forcing a child into this world and then forcing it to have a career, kidnapping, and slavery?" Sounds to me like this guy's having a little trouble coping in life. But instead of blaming himself and what a nut he is, find someone else to blame. That's what we always do, find someone else to blame. And finally, in today's sign,
Stimpy time! Stimpy time! Stimpy time! Come on!
I know that Mary Poppins, the original with Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke, I know that was one of my wife's favorite movies when she was a little girl. And there's a remake of Mary Poppins that just came out. And my wife was really excited. She wanted to do just a girls' night out. She invited all three daughters. I wasn't that interested in going to see the remake of Mary Poppins. But she invited all three of our daughters. They all were able to clear their schedule for one evening. And the four of them went and saw the remake of Mary Poppins. And they told me it was really good. Charming, delightful. I got 8 thumbs up. But I didn't know exactly what they were endorsing with their movie ticket purchase. Because today we are finding out that Mary Poppins, and in particular, this scene to the song Step in Time, is horribly racist. In a piece for the New York Times, Professor Daniel Pollack Pelsner, he criticizes this iconic moment in the movie where Dick Van Dyke's Bert is dancing on the rooftop to the classic song Step in Time. According to the New York Times essay, when the magical nanny, played by Julie Andrews, accompanies her young charges, Michael and Jane Banks, up their chimney, her face gets covered in soot, but instead of wiping it off, she gamely powders her nose and cheeks even blacker. This might seem like an innocuous comic scene if Travers Noddle's novels didn't associate chimney sweeps' blackened faces with racial caricature. When the dark figures of the chimney sweeps step in time on a roof, a naval buffoon, Admiral Boom, shouts, "We're being attacked by Hottentots," and orders his cannon to be fired at the cheeky devils. I watched this scene this morning. I saw that Dick Van Dyke used his broom like a golf club to just thwack the cartoony cannon balls back in the direction from where they came. But according to the essay in the New York Times, we're in on the joke, such as it is. These aren't really black Africans. They're grinning white dancers in blackface. It's a parody of Black Menace. It's even posted on a white nationalist website as evidence of the film's racial hierarchy. I've said before, we got a lot of people who are looking to be victims. And there are things worth discussing in society where people are pointing out some actual problems. This ain't one of them. Mary Poppins, what's it been, 60 years? 65, 70 years since this movie was made? And so now in 2019, the New York Times runs an essay talking about how racist it is. Everybody's got to find victimization around every corner. And again, the problem with that is there are some legitimate stories of racism and sexism, and you call it, you name it. And they all get diminished when absolutely ridiculous stuff is tossed out in the New York Times as legitimate. People tend to disregard everything that comes from people who cry racism when this is given some legitimacy by the New York Times. And that's why all of this is today's sign, the end is near. All right, I'm going to go battle the icy roads, try to make my way home, and then enjoy an evening in the incredible glow of a snowy night in Seattle. I love this. I love this weather. Gotta get out of here. I've said everything I have to say for today, but I will think up some new stuff for tomorrow's big show, and I will see you back here tomorrow at high noon. Candy, Mike, and Todd are coming up next. See you at noon. Hello. Teach the beggars how to-